Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series.
About how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app.
And subscribe now.
Chris, we have finally hit the finals, baby. We are here.
Yeah. I don't know the results yet. You obviously do. But before you tell me about them, let's talk about the songs that made it to the finals a little bit. I did some research on them. You did some research on them. And I got to say, these two songs that are pitted up against each other, Counting Crows, Mr. Jones, and Basket Case from Green Day, they're two of the best songs of the 90s.
For sure. I mean, we're just talking about singles released in 1994, and you've literally got two of the heaviest hitters of the entire decade pitted against each other right now. I mean, if that doesn't just add more credence to your theory that 1994 is the best year of everything, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Let's talk about Counting Crows a little bit first, who,
okay,
if I had to guess, don't tell me yet, don't tell our listeners yet, but if I had to guess, I would think that this is our runner-up. Even though I voted for Mr. Jones in the finals.
As did I.
So, Mr. Jones, for those who don't know, was the debut single from Counting Crows. It was released in December of 1993 as the lead single from August and Everything After, but it debuted on the Billboard Radio Songs chart in January of 1994, and then it entered the top 10 5 weeks later. In May of 1994, it reached its peak U.S. chart position of number 5. And the band's surprise success happened to coincide, Matt, with Kurt Cobain's death, which, strangely enough, the day people are hearing this episode, the day it comes out, is 30 years from the day Kurt Cobain died. And, you know, that
messed up Adam a bit.
Yeah, I saw that. He said that in an interview, he said, "We heard that Kurt had shot himself, and it really scared the hell out of me because I thought these things in my life are getting so out of control," which I don't really know what he meant by that. Unless he was feeling some of the things that Kurt was feeling.
I can shine a little light on it, honestly. Okay. Not directly, but do you know what he changes the lyrics in Mr. Jones to during many live performances?
So it's that one line where it's, "When everybody loves you, that's just about as funky as you can be." He changes it to, "That's just about as fucked up as you can be." Is that what you're talking about?
He says that. And the other line that he changes is in the song, in the recorded version of the song, he says, "We all want to be big, big stars, but we've got different reasons for that." He now sings, "We all want to be big, big stars, and then we get second thoughts about that." So I think that for him, it wasn't like, oh, Adam was like shooting up heroin like the rest of them, but it was more like they were exploding and he was probably having a lot of second guesses about stardom.
Yeah.
And that was something that Kurt talked about so much. And I think that that's why, because he did write a song about it on the following album, Recovering the Satellites, which was called Catapult. And to me, when I hear that title, I think of like being catapulted into stardom. So I think that that was a lot of what his wrestling was, you know, they say it all the time. People dream of being this big famous celebrity, but I think that there is a ceiling of how fun that is when you become an absolute superstar where every single thing that you do is being scrutinized and looked at and analyzed and discussed. And I think, you know, Counting Crows blows up. He's dating two different women from Friends. Like, I'm sure the spotlight was hot and heavy on him at that point when all this happened.
Right. It's funny, Matt. Last night I went to see Bayside play in Pittsburgh, and we were hanging out with them back in their dressing room. And we got onto the subject. One way or another, we got onto the subject of Counting Crows. And okay. I was talking about the last time I saw them in Pittsburgh. And of course, as we all know, when Counting Crows plays live, Adam Durich just goes off the rails with the lyrics and the melodies. He plays it really fast and loose, and it's hard to sing along. A lot of people hate it. I don't mind it. I think it's fun and funny. But Anthony from Bayside was saying, man, I hate it. But he said, do you know why he does that? And I was like, what do you mean? I just figured he wants to be like, I think Bob Dylan does that. He literally says in this song, I want to be Bob Dylan.
I was under the impression he didn't want people to sing along with him.
Well, Anthony said, which I had never heard this before, I was talking about the first time I ever saw Counting Crows play live on Saturday Night Live. And I hadn't heard them yet.
Yeah.
That was my first time seeing them or hearing them. And I remember me and my dad laughing about them, being like, that was the worst. That was so bad. What is he doing? But what Anthony said was that, so when Adam Duritz went into the booth to sing, he didn't have lyrics or melodies or anything. He just went in there and riffed, like, just completely off the top of his head. So he would do four or five times through the song, and then the producer would just comp it. He would just take a little bit from this take, a little bit from that take, a little bit from whatever. So Adam Duritz had never actually performed the song that way, you know?
Gotcha.
So okay. I had actually never heard that. I'm just going off of what Anthony said. I didn't research it myself.
I'm curious how accurate that is, because I could see that on some songs, but not all the songs. Some of the songs have a pretty structured storytelling to them, it feels like. But, you know, in 2022, here's a little factoid I have found. American Songwriter magazine ranked this the fourth best Counting Crows song. Do you know what the other three songs they put higher than it
the
were?
The fourth best Counting Crows song. What would they have put higher? You know, I don't know how they're judging the songs, but man.
I'll give you a hint. Okay. This is the only hint I'll give you. All three songs are on three different albums. They're all tracks on the first three Counting Crows albums.
Okay, well, I think one of those three has to be, geez, why can't I think of the name of the song? Waiting for You.
No.
Really? What's that song called?
Angels of the Silences. That's one of the best. That is not the song they picked from Recovering the Satellites. They picked A Long December, which they put as their number one Counting Crows.
I don't know
song.
About all that. I mean, I like A Long December, but number one? I don't know.
What? So that remains a track from This Desert Life and a track off August and Everything After.
Oh, another off August and Everything After. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends. Are they just going all singles, or are they going some?
No, this is definitively not a single that they picked off of August and Everything After.
If I was making this list, I would go for Raining in Baltimore, but I think they probably chose Anna Begins.
Neither of those. Omaha.
Oh, I like Omaha.
I like Omaha, but I mean, you know me. I am Mr. Murder
of One.
That's my number one Counting Crows song. And then what song do you think came off of This Desert Life?
Oh, this
which was in the
life.
Number three spot. Omaha was the number two best song, according to them.
You know, there's a song on This Desert Life I really love. I don't know what it's called, but it's the song. off the top of my head, I don't know what it's called, but it's a song that goes, ah, you know that one?
I vaguely know
can
that
you
one.
See Ohio,
yeah, that's not the one.
Oh, okay.
They went with Mrs. Potter's Lullaby, the like 7.5 minute one.
That might be.
Hey, Mrs. Potter, don't cry. Hey,
oh,
Mrs.
Right.
Potter.
That's a good song.
Oh, it's a really good song.
Man,
that was
I
a song
listen
that
to that album.
That
today.
Album because I thought like Hanging Around was okay.
Yeah.
And then someone played me Mrs. Potter's Lullaby, and I'm like, okay, this song. This song fucking kicks ass. This is a great song.
Listen to that album if you haven't. It is great. Hey, one more thing I wanted to talk about with Mr. Jones is I never really knew. I just attributed my own meaning to this song or whatever. Did you ever know the story behind the song?
I was just going to ask you if you knew who Mr. Jones was in reference to, because I did right. not know this.
Yeah, so it's in reference to bassist Marty Jones of the Himalayans, which is the band that Adam Duritz was in from 1989 to 1991. The song is about struggling musicians, them. And on VH1 Storytellers, Adam Duritz said, it's really a song about my friend Marty and I. We went out one night to watch his dad play. He was a flamenco guitar player who lived in Spain, and he was in San Francisco in the Mission playing with his old flamenco troupe. And after the gig, we all went to this bar called the New Amsterdam in San Francisco on Columbus. Then he said they were drunk at the bar after watching Marty Jones' dad play, and they saw Kenny Dale Johnson, the longtime drummer for Chris Isaac, sitting with three women. And then Adam said, it just seemed like, you know, we couldn't even manage to talk to girls. We were just thinking if we were rock stars, it'd be easier. I went home and wrote the song.
It's a good song. I love that story.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly like he's citing everything he did that night. Like he captured one night of going and seeing flamenco music, his friend's dad. He's drinking with his friend. They're fantasizing about what it must be like to be rock stars. He turns this all into a song.
That's why I question Anthony's assessment that he just riffed this out in the booth, because this feels like a very structured out written story that he's telling us. Now maybe the other songs, maybe Anna Begins and you know those songs were more riffed out, but there's no world where I believe that he just walked in a booth and accidentally in three or four takes just told a very detailed story of a night that happened to him off the top of the dome.
That's true. Like, that's true. Probably not this song, because this does have a great story, man. I love the storytelling in this song. I love the emotion in this song. Such a feel-good song when this one comes on. Fun to sing along to. La, 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 la. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So much of that riffing is just adds to the catchiness and fun of this song. It's a lot looser. We're going to talk about Basket Case in a minute here. It's a lot looser of a song, it feels like. I mean, at least vocally.
You know what? Actually, until you did that la, 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 I never connected this before. But as much as you talk about how he wants to be Bob Dylan, this song doesn't feel like a Bob Dylan song. It actually feels to me like a Van Morrison song.
Hmm.
This feels like an early, like a Moon Dance era Van Morrison song with just how loose and free flowing it is. But yeah, let's talk about the other song. The song that you're assuming won this, as you said. You think Mr. Jones is the runner-up.
They were the favorites. Green Day Basket Case was definitely the favorite.
So I looked into something very different here because, like, in my mind, I was like, all right, everybody knows Green Day. And if they know Green Day, they definitely know Basket Case. It was the second single off of Dookie. It spent 4 weeks as the number one alternative song. I want to talk about all the awards and accolades that came upon this song for a second. So, it was nominated for Best Rock Vocal Performance at the Grammys in 1995. And it lost. Here's the songs that it lost with and what song won it. So, also nominated, Counting Crows Round Here.
Oh.
Nirvana's All Apologies.
Okay.
And Pearl Jam's Daughter.
All
lost because the award went to Aerosmith for Crazy. Additional fact about Aerosmith, they are the second, they're the band with the second most wins in the category of rock vocals. second only to U2. Aerosmith has 4 wins in that category. U2 has 7 wins in that category.
Okay.
Rolling Stone in 2021 named it the 150th greatest song of all time.
Yeah.
In their updated version of the 500 greatest songs of all time. As of March of this year, as of basically right now, it is still their most streamed song on Spotify with over 1 billion streams. They may have made like $15 on this song by that algorithm.
1 billion streams is a lot of streams. I mean, even, okay, Spotify does not pay artists enough. We all know that. But if you have 1 billion streams of something you are making, I wonder how much money that equates to. It has to be in the millions, I would think. I could be way off on that.
I don't know.
I hope. I hope they made some millions from having 1 billion streams. But yeah, I was actually surprised that this is still their most streamed song. I mean, it's been around a lot longer than the American Idiot songs, but I just for some reason thought those songs like Boulevard of Broken Dreams or American Idiot or whatever. I just thought those were, I don't know, just hit more people or something.
Yeah. I think that this is the song that keeps. If we're thinking about Spotify and how Spotify connects with things like TikTok and all of that, this is a song that I can see people finding and like speeding up or doing something weird with on TikTok more than those other songs. I also think it's a more relatable song than American Idiot and Wake Me Up When September Ends and Boulevard of Broken Dreams, because the song is actually just about Billy Joe's struggles with anxiety. Yep. And how he felt like he was going crazy before he was officially diagnosed with having a panic disorder. In his book, Welcome to My Panic, he actually revealed that the song was written while he was on speed.
Right. I think it was just this week I was talking about how I've never done speed. I don't know what speed feels like. Are meth and speed the same thing? I think so.
I think they might be. Listen, the only speed I've ever done starred Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
Wow.
And it was great.
Okay.
It was a really good time.
How about speed 2? Did you do speed 2?
No, I did not touch cruise control.
Okay.
It was nominated for 9 VMAs and lost in every single category that it was nominated for. So I want to run down what beat it. So they lost the Video of the Year Award, the Best Group Video Award, and the Viewer's Choice Award to TLC's Waterfalls.
Oh, come on. They got to at least give them one of them. I mean, Waterfalls, was the video that good? The video wasn't. It was more
cool. That's the CGI one where they're in the water.
Do you think that's that good?
I think in 1994, it was like, whoa, what is this? Are we watching The Abyss? What's this music video?
I mean, the song, it's a good song that like tells a story and it's easy to understand. But the video, I think the Green Day video is way better.
Chris, this one's going to upset you even more. Oh. They lost they shouldn't even been in this category, honestly, but they lost the Best Metal/Hard Rock video to White Zombies, More Human Than Human.
That's stupid.
They lost Best Cinematography to the Rolling Stones Love Is Strong
video. Oh, man. Do you remember that video?
Is that the one where they're gigantic?
Yes. Yes.
I hate that video so much.
Oh, it sucks. And that song sucks. That's the song that goes, your love is strong and you're so weak. You make me hard. Or something. Like he says, you make me hard in it. It's fucking gross song.
Well, here's the ones that make sense. They also lost Best Alternative Video, Best Editing, Breakthrough Video, and Best Direction of a Music Video to Weezer's Buddy Holly. Like,
yeah,
for sure. That makes sense to me. That's the most sensible collection of losses, because that was a revolutionary video at the time it came out.
I mean, yeah, the Weezer video's an all-timer for sure, but the Green Day video is pretty good. It's pretty striking. It's very
it's great
much
color. They did a great use of, I say this with this video and the first video, Longview, the colors pop in both of those videos in a very unique way and in very different ways. Like Longview's very grainy but still pops, whereas like this one's like pristine. Now they just have it out on HD, and here's a couple people who have covered Basket Case. Avril Lavigne has released a promotional cover of it for one of her tours. Weird Al covered it in the Alternative Polka,
yeah,
and the one that was the most confusing to me, Bastille, the band that did the song Pompeii covered this for the Amazon Prime Tick TV series.
Okay. Cool.
There was a weird combination of words there, but that was my research for Basket Case, because I thought, let's talk about the legacy. There's not too much to dive into with the songwriting of this one. It's pretty similarly to how Mr. Jones kind of just tells a story that's very same with Basket Case. There's not a lot to interpret here with what he's saying in the words. He's telling a tale.
Yeah, he's telling a tale that is truthful. It's not just some cool stuff that sounds cool. It's like what he was going through. And I think that's pretty cool. It's a little bit tighter of a song, you know. It's not as loose on the lyrical side. It's very much what the kids would call a bop, I would say.
Let me ask you this question, because I know this from the brief period of time that I drummed and the little bit that I know playing guitar. As much as I love Mr. Jones, this has to be a much more fun song to play instrumentally. Like, especially the drums. I just think that Trey Cool has so many fun fills going on this. Like, the guitar I could see being dull, but even the bass lines. Mike and Green Day is underrated bass player for some of the bass lines he sneaks into these songs.
For the drums and bass especially, Basket Case is way more of an aerobic exercise. So yes, I would probably agree that if you want to get your cardio in, that playing Basket Case is the more fun in that way. But I don't know, man. Mr. Jones could be fun too. I think both of these songs, if I were in a 90s cover band, I'd have fun playing both of these.
Of course. Well, I think you're going to get more people singing along when you play Mr. Jones, and that I feel like is half the fun of if you're in a bar cover band, you want that room either dancing or singing.
Right.
So are we ready to reveal the final results?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Okay, so 110 votes came in for this final round. I've officially canceled my
survey monkey-like
advanced thing, so I'm not getting charged for that anymore. With 61% of the vote, Green Day Basket Case.
Yeah, I knew.
Yeah, I really was hoping for an underdog story. I wanted the Counting Crows to pull this out of nowhere. Defy the odds.
61%. They kind of crushed.
I know. There was a point though when we put this out on Friday, and I would check every day just to see. Friday, Saturday, and even Sunday, it was like 51-49.
Wow.
it was that Monday, Tuesday push. The Green Day fans came out in a big way. But you know, hey, like you said, genuinely two of the best songs from the 90s. I'm excited for next March when we get to do the 95 songs. I think we'll be able to, now that we know that this is a thing that we want to do again, we can really make the brackets more sensible of like, this is the pop category, this is the hip hop category, this is the rock category. Really, really make it fun.
Here's what I would change.
And we got to better seed it out too, because I just randomized it.
That's the thing, man. I don't think we have to next year divide it by like types of music, but I just think you have two sides and you and I have to figure out what our rank, like our seedings are. So that way you have the one playing against the 16 or the one against the 8 or whatever to start in wherever. So it just works out. That way you don't end up with a Buddy Holly versus Basket Case in the second round.
Right out the gate. Yeah. Chris, I think we're going to be back with another bonus episode in about 2 weeks because I'm not sure if you've been paying attention. April 19th, T Swift's new album comes out, and I think you and I should give that thing a listen and talk about it.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever listened to a full Taylor Swift album before. I'm not a hater. I'm more of a, like, I don't care-er.
Yeah. Well, you're going to care in 2 weeks when we talk about that as one of our bonus episodes.
Wow, it's coming out already?
Yeah. I saw that post it the other day, and I thought, I'll text Chris this. And then I thought, I'll just tell him live on the air.
All right. I'm down.
But since we're not going to be doing one of these bonus episodes for 2 weeks, you got anything exciting you need to tell the audience about beforehand?
Punchline will be back on the road in June of 2024 with the Spill Canvas. We are playing our album Action for its 20-year anniversary in full at those shows. So we are in Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, and Columbus. Both the Detroit and Columbus shows. The Detroit show is originally at the Shelter. That sold out, so it got moved up to a bigger venue. Now it's St. Andrews. And same thing with Columbus. It was at a smaller venue. It sold out. It got moved to a bigger venue called Scully's in Columbus. So come on out. Tickets are on sale.
Nice. And this will be close. Well, yeah, I'll say it now. Like I said, Taylor Swift album comes out on the 19th. You might have a review from us that same day. But that weekend, I will be in Gettysburg with the guys from Horror Movie Night doing the Creature Feature Weekend convention. So if you live anywhere near Gettysburg, the lineup for this show is insane. And we'll be there doing live panels and a live podcast episode and a bunch of other fun stuff at the show. So come check us out. You've heard all of my co-hosts on past episodes of One Hit Thunder. So come on down. And we'll be back on Wednesday with one of your regularly scheduled episodes of One Hit Thunder.
By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor, but if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low-carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code 150 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code 150, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Hey, you. Did you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.